of what of who you are, what you do, and what Asking Matters is about.
Sure. Well, I am a lifelong nonprofit person and a fundraiser. I never thought I'd be a fundraiser. Most of us don't grow up saying, I want to be a fundraiser. I went to college, got the bug. I worked in a university office for my work-study job. I got involved with student clubs, and I decided I want to work in an institution that's about giving back, that's about social good, that's about community, as opposed to a for-profit. And went out into the world to do that, not knowing what that meant in terms of the actual work. And my third job was leading a small dance company in Chicago. Not only did I not have any dance experience, I had no fundraising experience, I had no management experience, I had nothing. But then again, they were paying virtually nothing, so they were happy to have me, I guess. And I was the only fundraiser, so I had to learn on the spot. There was a big grant due to a Chicago-based foundation 2 weeks later, and I had to write it and speak to the funder and try and get this renewal of this big grant. And I used my common sense. I asked for help, and I went from there. And it turned out I was good at fundraising, and I was particularly good at working with the board and cultivating and soliciting individual donors. And that led my path, because, of course, everyone needs that in their organization, and not a lot of people can do it well or want to do it well or will do it at all. And I was willing to do it for the cause. So 30-some-odd years later, here I am. So I continued to do that. I've been a director of development, a deputy ED, an executive director. I've been a board chair. I've played all these roles. And 10 years ago, with my co-founder, Andrea Kielstedt, developed Asking Matters because we felt we needed to do work in the field in helping people be comfortable and effective askers. And at the core of the business was this concept of the asking styles, which led to the book, which we talked about last time, because it's important to understand who you are and that fundraising really is about relationships, especially the one-on-one. When we're talking about the big gifts the board helps with, the board's gifts themselves, we're talking about sitting down in person, getting to know people, understanding what's important to them, and asking them for gifts. And that's all based on who we are in the relationship. So my whole business is really focused on helping people understand that and understanding the best practices in fundraising and working with boards and so forth.
I love it. That's really, really good advice. It was funny because I was having lunch last week with a woman, and she was thinking about, she really wanted to do something with nonprofits or a nonprofit area she wanted to focus on. And she said, how do you get CEOs to give you money? And how, you know, she was just kind of dabbling. I said, well, I think everything's based on relationships, right?
Yes. Yes, no matter what the institution is, even if it's government funding, a member item from a council member, or even a competitive grant through a federal agency, it's always going to be about the people you know and the relationships, so that because they want to give to people they trust.
Right. And the one thing about boards that struck me when, I think we talked about this a little bit before, but most people on boards, it's their first time being on a board.
Yeah, it's amazing. Obviously, when you get to the big, fancier institutions, people have moved their way up to those. They're more seasoned, and chances are they've sat on a board before. But you've got 1.5 million nonprofits in the United States, the bulk of which have a budget under $1 million and are younger and smaller. And most of the people coming onto those boards have very little board experience. They may have been on a professional board, an association board, but many board members have never served on one before the one they're on.
Right, and I think the one thing you talk about and you've touched on is a lot of people say, sure, I'll be on the board, and there's no training whatsoever. You're just kind of thrown in there, and that's the problem you're trying to help solve, right?
Or get people especially on the fundraising side, because everyone comes to the board, we hope, with common sense and hopefully the desire to be part of a team and work as a team to solve things and whatever. But most people come without any fundraising experience, and then we don't give them any fundraising training. And we know, look, very few people really want to go out there and ask face-to-face for gifts. Some people really like writing grants. Some people like putting on special events. Some people like the science of direct mail and all of that. But there's a lot at stake when you're asking face-to-face. So how often does someone you're interviewing for the board say, well, I'll do anything but fundraise. I'm not a fundraiser. I hate fundraising. I can't ask my friends. They assume it's a certain type of fundraising they have to do. They don't want to do it. And we still put them on the board instead of saying, well, you know what? We'll actually work with you. There's a better way there. And we really do need you to fundraise if you're on our board, but we promise it's not going to mean some of the stuff you think it means or that at other boards it is. So, yes, we don't give them training. We drag them into the fundraising, kicking and screaming, and we need to change that scenario if we want our boards to be effective and if we want to fulfill our vision as an organization. Right,
again, and it goes back to common sense, and I think we're seeing a transformation where people are asked to invest in your values, and that's a good way to put it, right? So if you're in friends with this person who's started this nonprofit or you want to get more involved, then you want to invest with your time, your talent, and your resources. So, you know, but I think the hard part is when you're asked to, yeah, give us your Rolodex, give us other people we can hound to get money from, you know, so yeah. That's scary. That's very scary.
It's scary, and it's lousy fundraising. I don't know if we want to talk about that now or later.
Go for it. Whatever.
Okay.
Just go with the flow.
So I'm going to start with this because I did a board training Monday night as a volunteer. It's a local theater company near where I live in South Orange. And whenever I train, I talk about this. I say, well, what stops us from asking more often in person? I talk about how impactful it is. The money all comes from individuals. And I ask board members, so what stops you? And, of course, fear of rejection and such. But we always hear, if my friends give, I have to give. This quid pro quo. You give to me, I give to you. And here's why this is so awful. And another person said, well, I don't want to step on relationships, which is related to that, right? I mean, these are people in your life, your friends, your business associates, your family members, and you don't want to jeopardize the relationship for the sake of the cause, unless you're, this one cause is your utter passion, you'll do anything in your whatever. But for board members, you don't want to... You destroy your other lives just to help this organization. And it feels with the quid pro quo fundraising and this reciprocal transactional fundraising that you're doing that. Here's the problem with it. So, Nicole, let's say you sit on a board and you're told by your board chair, okay, you need to send this end of the year letter to your list, your Rolodex. Young people won't know what a Rolodex is, but it rolled around and it had cards, right?
And no electricity.
No electricity. It was totally powered by your wrists. So, so you send out these letters and you're supposed to personalize them and sign your name. So some of your friends will make gifts and send you letters for their charities. And you will probably say to the development officer, okay, I got these gifts, but please don't bother my friends during the year. They only gave because of me. So don't start calling them on your own and inviting them to things. I don't want you to bother them. Which makes sense. You're trying to protect your relationships while bringing in money. Here's the problem. Then all those donors, none of those donors, build a relationship with the institution. It's only with you. The institution has to track you, send out the right thank you notes. How many times have I had a board member say, Joan got my thank you note and it had the wrong amount on it, or it said this and actually no, the money came from Joan and Michael even though only Joan was on the check, or whatever, right? It happens all the time, right? And we have all these issues. Here's the biggest problem. Here are the two biggest problems. One, the day you leave the board, you will stop sending that letter and all those gifts will stop coming. So now whoever replaces you on the board isn't building the base but replacing part of the funding base. The second is that you now have given $1,000 to organizations you don't care about. And your friends collectively have given $1,000 to an organization they don't care about. And what I try to tell board members and get them to do is to say, okay, let's have a detente today. What do you call it when you ask people to, send in the guns and no, there won't be any issue. Today is one of those days where there are no repercussions, you know, and you okay. just, whatever that is.
I don't know.
It's the same thing with the IFs. On a certain day, why don't you all say to each other, let's stop this, or at least where you can. And you give that extra $1,000 to your organization where you're sitting on the board and where you care. I have had board members over the years say to me, I hate doing this. Can I just write you a check?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yes, you can. Write a check, stop asking your friends, and stop giving them.
Yeah.
And I've had board members give thousands of dollars more out of their own pocket. They feel much better not having to hit up their friends and deal with
right.
this. It's much more efficient for the organization, and now you have a bigger investment as a board member in the organization you care about. So this is my number one soapbox item. As a matter of fact, I think it might have been yesterday I was talking to someone and saying, part of me wishes I could just retire and spend the next 15 years going around the country pushing this concept and trying to get everyone to buy in so that we can get rid of the quid pro quo, because we don't need more donors at our organization. We need better donors.
Mm-hmm.
And having all of these people who really don't care isn't helping us. And a lot of those gifts, they're not even the gifts we want our board members going after. If I'm in a $1 million-a-year organization, do I want my board member getting me $1,500 gifts? That's not making any difference to the bottom line, really. It's not strategic. And the board should be doing strategic work. So as you can tell, I do have a lot to say on this topic. And I just because I'm trying to get board members to feel better, organizations to be more strategic. So,
no, well, you've got a lot of experience and you deal with it every day.
I do.
It's all good advice. Like, it all goes back to common sense, right? If everyone would just, stop the madness and just go back to common sense.
Right.
And I think it used to be, give and get was the terminology. And then it was
yes.
give or get is mm-hmm. kind of no one else. Okay. Well, we're going to go into a commercial and then we'll dive in again.
Good.
Okay.
When it matters most, our award-winning team of emergency physicians and nurses provides sophisticated care 24 hours a day. Superior emergency care at a moment's notice. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice...
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
Good morning. This is Nicole Smith. You're listening to Happy to Help on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, and we are on Facebook Live today at Happy Hunterdon. And I'm so excited to have Brian Saber back. We already decided he's going to have to come back again because we just have so much to talk about. So we're going to dive into the give or get, give and get. Give us the lay down, the little line.
Okay. So here's my thing. I believe that every board member should be asked to give and to get to the best of his or her ability. Giving means a personally significant gift. I don't like minimums. It's been proved that minimums are more of a ceiling than a floor. You have to set the minimum at a level most people can achieve, and that means it's lower than what many people can give on the board, in which case you still have to ask those board members for more. And you should be asking every board member for an exact amount like you would any other major donor. Mm-hmm. And you're still going to have some people who can't make the minimum, and then you're going to say, oh, don't worry, it doesn't pertain to you. We know you're on the board because of A, B, C, and D, which doesn't make them feel good. So, and as a matter of fact, Opera America did a big study this past year of 80 opera companies, I believe. I do some work with them and some opera companies on their boards and fundraising. And they found, so they divided the opera companies into five different levels, right? So you've got the Met and Chicago's Lyric Opera in level A and B, C, D, down to the little $250,000 organization. Mm-hmm. At every level, organizations that had a minimum gift had a lower average board gift than those who asked everyone to make a personally significant gift. Mm-hmm. So that's on the give side. Mm-hmm. Why give and get as opposed to give or get? Here's the give or get example. Let's say, Nicole, you're on a board and you're told you have to give or get $5,000. If you're more well off than others, you will write that check for $5,000 to be done with it because it's easier to do that than to fundraise. On the other hand, the person who can't make the $5,000 gift, who is less well off and can only give $1,000, now has to fundraise for the rest. So A, that person has to do the harder work. Mm-hmm. B, it's harder for that person to raise the money because people who have more generally know people who have more. It's how we live. It's how we work. It's how we socialize. It's where our kids go to school. It's the club we belong to. Mm-hmm. So it's actually easier for the person who can give the $5,000 to raise more. So what you want on a board is for everyone to be doing their best. That's what creates the strongest organization, the strongest group of people, when everyone thinks they're in it together. Mm-hmm. Well, you're not in it together if one person can easily write a check for $5,000 and the other person is struggling. So it never creates the type of esprit de corps, the type of we are one that you want your board to have if it's going to make good decisions together, together feel a vested interest in the future of this organization, and so forth. So I say it's everyone needs to make a personally significant gift and help to the best of their ability. And what does that mean? Everyone has to be an ambassador and an advocate. If you're not willing to go out and always talk up your organization, what's the problem? You should love it and want to talk about it to everyone because you care and see who might be interested. You need to help cultivate people, whether it's giving tours, being on a site visit, going with the executive director to a funder as a board member, speaking up at a town hall meeting, whatever it is. And everyone should be asking for resources in general besides money. So in kind, services, expertise. Would you sit on this board committee? I know you're an amazing marketer. Will you sit on our PR and marketing committee? We really need some financial help. Would you sit on the finance committee because you're a CPA and we had an issue with our audit? Would you do this, right? Or our event is coming up and we really need 500 mugs and I know your company makes them. Would you donate them? Yeah. And all those asks are much easier for board members. Or would you donate your space where we want to have a cultivation event and we'd love to have it in your gallery downtown or in your restaurant or whatever. Yeah. And then some, hopefully most, will ask for gifts. I never say everyone has to face-to-face on their own ask for a gift because everyone won't be good at it. Mm-hmm. And why have someone do something for your organization poorly? I always use this example. I was talking to this theater company and I said, would you have someone who's lousy at lighting run the light board for your next production? No. Well, why would you give such an important task like fundraising to someone who's going to do a terrible job? Why would you want anyone representing you poorly? Mm-hmm. That's terrible. Mm-hmm. Terrible. And if they don't know how to do it and they're asked to do it, they're going to feel awful about doing a bad job. So I think almost everyone can sit in on solicitation meetings where maybe the executive director makes the ask and brings a board member, or the board member sets up the meeting, but someone else actually asks. Because the hardest thing is just this little phrase, Nicole, would you consider a gift of $5,000 for our organization? Room to read.
Yes.
Right. So, and that's something someone else can do. So it gets back to what I said before. When board members think fundraising, they think, oh my, I'm going to have to go through my Rolodex and I'm going to have to ask all these people. And it's all about saying, okay, Joe, you know, will you give me $500 this year? And we have to put it in perspective, because it's almost all about cultivation and relationship. Mm-hmm. And someone else can actually make that ask, say that exact phrase, or even go to the meeting without you if that's problematic, if need be. Mm-hmm. But there is so much fundraising board members can do that is strategic and long-term and doesn't step on toes and such. And we need every board member to do it. How's that?
No, it's perfect. And I mean, it goes back to common sense. And the one thing that just made me think of, so when I was in college, I worked at TGI Fridays as a waitress. And they had like waiter training programs. It was like 2 weeks long and you had all this stuff. But the big thing that they did was you had to do a follow. So your first few shifts, you did a follow. You just followed another waiter. So, you know, here we are in our little red and white striped shirts going. And it was really good because you got to see it live and in action and on the job training and all that stuff. So you didn't really have to do much, but you got to follow. And so I think that's just perfect, because people that are uncomfortable, they can't imagine what a fundraising ask looks like or anything like that. You just go and sit there kind of, you know,
right.
Isn't that?
Yes. And here's another perspective. So let me ask you, in your adult life, how often has someone said, Nicole, you've been contributing to this organization for years through our letter or through whatever, and I would like to come get to know you better and ask you for your gift in person this year. May I come sit down and do that with you? How often has someone sat down face-to-face, one-on-one, and asked you for a specific gift?
Zero.
Now, I'm not telling everyone who's listening to go run to Nicole, because I get this. Sometimes at the end of a training, people come up and say, well, I'm asking you, would you give whatever? And I say, you haven't even cultivated me. Here's the point, though, and it's a really important point. If you, Nicole board member, have never been asked in person, and right, you're a new board member, and you've never been asked, how do you have any idea what it's all about?
Yep.
You don't even know from the other side. Mm-hmm. So one of the exercises I like to do is to say, imagine if someone were going to come ask you for a gift, how would you like them to do it? Some people say, send me information in advance. Some people say, call me on the phone. Some people, whatever they say. And the reason I ask that is that as fundraisers, as people, we act towards others as we want others to act towards us.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Totally.
I used to send tons of birthday cards. Why? I wanted to receive lots of birthday cards. Now I don't care about the birthday cards. That's amazing how few birthday cards I sent. It's true, though, right? I mean, we tend to treat others like we want to be treated. So we tend to ask in a way where, yes, we need to accommodate the donor, but we also have to accommodate ourselves and do it in a way that's comfortable for us. So in asking that question, we figure out what's comfortable for us as askers. So what do you think?
Well, how do I know that's not a deflection point? Like, so if I say, Brian, you know, how do you like to receive information? And you're like, oh, I love reading stuff. Just send me a packet. And then it just goes in the circular file. Like, how do I know that?
Asking you just in an exercise you know.
Right.
So if it's important to you to get information in advance, you're going to feel comfortable, all things equal, sending information in advance to someone. Right. Now, once you get to know a donor, it's different. But the big hump here is that we don't know a lot of donors. Most of the people we're going after, we don't know well. When I think of the donors I got to know best, those are the easiest donors. I know what they like. It's not that I can't do what they like. It's that in the absence of knowing what they like, what do I do? Mm-hmm. Well, the thing to do is what's comfortable for you to do and then see if it works for them.
Okay.
You see what I'm saying?
Start with what you know.
Right. You start with what you know because you want to be comfortable. Mm-hmm. And you'll be more effective if you're comfortable,
correct,
all things equal. We talk about it a lot in terms of how do you set up the meeting? Do you call? Do you email? What do you do? Well, if you hate the phone, try to avoid it. If the only way to get your donor is by phone, okay, you have to get past the hump. If you email and email and email and the person doesn't respond, you switch to phone. But why start with phone if that really doesn't work for you? Start with email. Send a, if that's your preference. And then, you know, for every one of us, I'm an email person, there's someone who said, oh, God, I don't want to do that. I just want to, you know, I'm going to pick up the phone the moment and call. I'm comfortable with that. Then do that. So
yeah, no, I mean, I think all that's a good idea, but I think I've mentioned this before, is time is the most valuable resource we all have. And how do I, you know, maybe they, what if they ignore my emails? You can see who's calling. You can ignore texts. You can ignore all that. So it depends. So you have to somehow, how do you start a relationship when you're not on the radar?
Yes.
Kind of thing.
Well, we have to remember we're not begging and we can't beg and that everyone won't be interested. So we have to, what we're doing is culling, right? We're letting people self-select. And we want the people who show enthusiasm and are excited. I'm a big believer in spending more time with fewer people. You'd be better off going back to someone who's already giving you $5,000 or $10,000 and having another meeting and engaging them further. And the other thing is we do have to ask what's in it for the donor. Why would the donor meet with us? We know why we want to meet with the donor. Mm-hmm. But why would it be better for the donor to meet with us than just to talk on the phone? Is there something they might want to know? Do they want to help the organization? And if we can give them an argument for why it would be so helpful to have this meeting and bring them closer and hear their feedback in person, that could make the difference. We have to put ourselves in our donor's shoes to understand what would make the difference, because the first question is why would someone give, but the second, for the work we're trying to do here, is why would someone meet? Mm-hmm. And those are different, right? Mm-hmm. Those are different questions with different answers, and we need to know both.
Right. No, that makes sense. And you're also talking about if you've got some history, you've got a donor list, you've got some people that you already know. What if you're a brand new nonprofit and you're starting from scratch and you've got your friends? And we talked a little bit about you have a founders board, but how do you start to grow your people and your funders and your team? And you want to talk about that?
Sure. Well, you know, it's different depending on the sector you're in.
Okay.
Right. If you're in higher education, if you're in the arts, if you're in medical field, hospitals and such, you have patrons, clients, students, alumni and such. You have a built-in donor base. And people are giving either to support the institution they love or the institution that has saved their life mm-hmm. or someone else's life. And that's always going to be where you start. Mm-hmm. If you're doing something more social service organization oriented, like your organization, right, where you're helping others, you're not helping yourself and the people in your circle, you're helping people in need, people who need housing, food,
books,
literacy, absolutely. Then the people who are getting the services don't have the capacity. You need people who believe in giving back, who believe in spreading the wealth, who believe in making more equal a society that is always going to be unequal, right?
Yeah.
And leveling the playing field. So then that's harder. So if it's an organization like that, that's why you start with that band of warriors, the people who follow the founder, because they're going to go out and passionately try and raise money from everyone. You need to have, I'm a big believer, so special events. When people hear special event, they think fundraising event. That's one type of special event.
Okay.
But there are cultivation events and thank you events. And I'm a big believer in bringing people together for cultivation, acknowledgement, recognition, thank you, etc. Less so for fundraising, though I'm not entirely against it. But bringing people together to cultivate them is the way to start. So here, you have an organization that's about literacy. You could bring in someone who's doing really cutting-edge work on literacy, someone who's in the school, someone who's in the in doing the science maybe, and ask that person to speak and send an invitation, have someone host something in their home and send 100 invitations out, right? That's something the board can do. I'm really interested in literacy. That's why I'm on the board here. We're having an amazing speaker. If you're interested in this topic, come, please come. You'll meet people in the organization, and you'll get to learn more about what's happening in the field of literacy. Mm-hmm. Then you see who the hand raisers are, and you keep them involved, and you go back to them. Mm-hmm. So that's a key way to start building a base. And I have to assume you're doing something along those lines. What are you doing?
Yeah. Oh, no. I mean, I should have talked to you like 10 years ago. No, I've been having so much fun. Like, I do all kinds of stuff. We're just having our first Room to Read New Jersey Chapter Book Club event tonight at the Freehold Library with an author who's been on the show, Nikki Stern, who wrote The Former Assassin and The Wedding Crasher. And she is, I just reached out to her and I said, do you want to be our inaugural book club featured author? And the library said yes. And it's a Carnegie library. And Andrew Carnegie established 2,500 libraries in the U.S. And that was part of the inspiration for John Wood to establish Room to Read and do the same thing overseas. So we got that. We got a breakfast coming up on October 11th. So I do everything. I do kids stuff. I do school stuff. I just have a blast just coming up with these random things. And so I kind of probably need to be more focused. So I need to hire you.
Yeah. It sounds like you have many avenues for finding donors, for getting people excited about the cause and knowledgeable about it.
Well, but then when they're excited about the cause and excited to do things. Well, I have had a lot of people help me and fundraise and donate, but it seems like everyone's taxed. You know, everyone's like getting asked by all their friends and the school and that, you know. Yeah.
Okay. So here's the thing.
Yeah.
Okay. I should have just coined this already. Charity shock, I call it. Charity shock. Because day in and day out, we are asked for money.
Checkout stand every day.
At the checkout stand. Will you give $2 for this? Will you round up your bill?
Yes.
Emails come through. It's free now, right? Yes. And now all the political stuff, right? Until a few years ago, we never got asked by email for political causes. I'm getting a number of them every single day. We're almost there. Help us. We've made it. Do this, whatever. And, right, all the crowdfunding. So we are being asked right, left, and center. And it creates noise. However, back to a point I made before, how often is someone actually taking the time to say, I want to get to know you better. I want to tell you more about the cause. Let's say, I won't ask you for money this time, though I'm hoping eventually you'll be passionate enough to want to do more, but I can't expect you to do more until you know us. So we'd love the chance to get to know you. How many times is someone doing that with anyone? Very infrequently. And some people will say they're too busy for that, and life is way too busy today for many people,
for sure.
Right? It's just nonstop, but it isn't for everyone. And people care. We're a caring, giving society. And many people, when you position it that way, if it's something they're passionate about, will sit down with you and get to know you better. So that's how we separate ourselves from this. I mean, I can't tell you how often I have had to listen to my mother say to me, I'm so tired of getting all this stuff in the mail. I feel like it's a personal affront because I'm a fundraiser and then this field
is your fault.
It's my fault. And she's not trying to say it's my fault, but because I'm the expert, she wants me to know. And it's like, Mom, I don't do that fundraising. I've never done that type of fundraising because I like the personal one-on-one stuff. I'm not an expert on direct mail. I can only tell you that they're making money. If they weren't making money, they wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
But and the organizations, none of these organizations are flush, so they're just trying their best. Can you please have a little
compassion and patience?
Give them just throw it in the garbage. Just throw it. I know you think they're wasting their money. And I'm not saying it's the most efficient way to fundraise. It could be an expensive way to fundraise, but it's one of the ways we do it. And the nonprofit world is never going to be as efficient as you'd like it to be. But let me tell you about all the billions of dollars all these big fancy companies have wasted. They're not always efficient either. Think of all these, these companies that are merging, and Google bought this and Google bought that, and then they take a $4 billion write-off. You have to give charities the same you, benefit of the doubt, you're giving the corporations you buy stock in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I don't mean to get on a soapbox that way, but it's all about soapboxes. So, yeah, I have a lot of soapboxes. So I try to get people to understand the realities of it and also to understand that that is only one piece of fundraising and this can be much more effective. So as you can tell, I'm very passionate about it. And the more of it we do, the stronger our organizations are going to be. So.
Yeah, no, I love all this advice, and it does make sense. And but people are overwhelmed, but you can pick a cause that you truly care about and just go with it instead of jumping all over the place, right?
And I have one other thing I want to say on that.
Go ahead.
First, okay, no one has ever given me a dollar they can't afford. Everyone who's ever given me a gift could have given a little bit more. I wish I could say that many of the people who have given me gifts have sacrificed something significant for it. So when we say people are stretched and this and that, we're living in a very consumer society. Everyone now has to have the Apple earbuds. They're $175 or whatever. I don't have them. But, they've sold tens of millions of pairs or whatever. The list of everything we want, the second home, the third car, the whatever. Okay. But we're not stretched then. Mm-hmm. Without doubt, the wealthy have more. Most wealthy are not giving out of their income. They're giving out of investments, and each year they're getting wealthier. There's a lot of money in the United States, and I don't buy that we're stretched thin. I just had dinner last night. I'm a CASA volunteer.
Oh, yeah.
And I was meeting with my 20-and-a-half-year-old. This is my second case, and he's someone who has agreed to stay in the system later. And he doesn't have two nickels to rub together.
Right, right.
He passed a woman on the street, and he felt awful for her. She was with her child and gave her $10. He said, I wanted to give more. I really didn't have the $10. That's charitable giving.
Right.
He gave away like 5% of all the money he has right now to someone on the street.
Right.
So people feel overwhelmed. I think it's more because of all the asks, and they just have to take a step back and say, okay, well, and maybe stop writing checks to 100 organizations, mm-hmm. and why don't you focus? I'm not blaming anyone. I'm saying it would be great if you focused for you and everyone else. So.
Yeah. Well, I think there's plenty of statistics out there that say the poorest give more of their income, not disposable income, like their income,
their income.
To charities than the richest of the rich. Like, yeah.
Absolutely.
So it pains them to give, but that's where
right.
they live and that's how they give. And
what I'm
that's
talking
amazing.
About is the bigger gifts, the gifts that we're going to cultivate and solicit in person.
Right.
And there is plenty to go around mm-hmm. when we talk about those gifts.
Right. It's a mentality, right? And I think a lot of people are afraid to give to that person on the street because of fear. Like, are they really homeless? I don't know. But, what's $10 to you?
Yeah.
I don't know. But go ahead.
Well, that's so interesting because until a few years ago, I never gave on the street. Not because I didn't have incredible compassion, but as an introvert, I found it very awkward to interact with people I didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what would happen if I said hello or I went up to them? And then I turned 180 on that because I wanted them to know I wasn't judging them. And I waste lots of money, and we all waste lots of money. So who am I to judge that I'm giving $5? And I decided I was going to give $5 to everyone who asked me.
In the
suburbs where I live. I couldn't possibly do that in New York because I wouldn't even get to the end of the block. But out here, and to recognize people and give it, because I easily can give that $5, and it's important for them. And someone might go and buy booze. But a lot of people are really have awful luck and have had no opportunity. And I wouldn't judge anyone if you have an addiction. I don't want to judge you for having an addiction. So anyway, is that my fourth soapbox already?
I'm being very soapboxy.
You'll have to shut me up.
No, that's why you're here. It's exactly why you're here.
And that's why I'm in this field, I think, because I care so passionately about these things. I care about inequity and
right. Well, and I think we definitely need human interaction more than the bleeps and the tweets and all that stuff. So by you coming out of your shell just to humanly interact with a person, period, I think we all need to do more of that everywhere, on the
Good
street, everywhere we are. So
good point.
Yeah. All right. Yes. We'll take another quick break, and then we'll be back.
Oh, folks, you know what that music is. That's the time for modern design.
This blue thing is a really new trend. A lot of the designers are trying to introduce blue as a new cabinet color.
This is topical for you guys. This is really topical.
And the mother said, well, I'd like her room to be gray. And the little girl said, Mom, gray is the color of depression.
Hi, this is Rich Scuderi of Modern Design. We're on live every Wednesday from 2 to 3, and you're listening on WHCR-DB.
The traffic is stuck.
Max Living, brought to you by the Max Challenge of Clinton, New Jersey. Join me, your host, Mark LaRose, every Wednesday at 1 p.m. right here on 100 in Chamber Radio. I'll be discussing important health and fitness subjects, featuring guests and success stories. We are here to help motivate you. It's a beautiful day.
When it matters most, our award-winning team of emergency physicians and nurses provides sophisticated care 24 hours a day. Superior emergency care at a moment's notice. 100 in Healthcare, your full circle of care.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody right there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in? Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Good morning. This is Nicole Smith. You're listening to Happy to Help on 100 in Chamber Radio. And we've got all kinds of soapbox ideas, and we're having a great time here today with Brian Saber from Asking Matters. And we're talking about boards. We're talking about a lot of things, but we're going to get back to boards. So tell us about what you want to tell us about boards.
So, well, I want to talk about training because we started on that front, and then we've been following all our
passions.
And things. So one of the challenges is board members come without much experience in fundraising. We ask them to fundraise. They think they can't do it. They don't want to do it. They don't think they know how to do it. And in some ways, yes, they don't know, but in other ways, they actually do, because it's about relationships. And it all starts with their passion for the cause and their ability to articulate that. Because if you can tell a good story as a board member, you can engage someone else. So the number one piece of work an organization has to do is helping board members become comfortable with their story. There's no such thing as an elevator pitch. 15, 20 years ago, you actually heard that a lot. We've got to give our board an elevator pitch. An elevator pitch means everyone is saying the exact same thing. And unless you're a great actor, now this board I was on Monday night had a couple of actors because it's a theater board. I bet a couple of them could take some very generic visionary statement and make it seem their own. But most people are going to fall flat, right? Because they're not speaking from the heart. And it's difficult to do that. It should be easy to speak from the heart, but you've got to give board members the chance to practice that as a group. Board members spend so much time at board meetings. I'm not going to get on that soapbox, but I am going to say that I've never been to a board meeting that didn't have 15 minutes you could have used differently and more productively, or that where you couldn't have asked the board to stay 15 minutes longer. Use those 15 minutes, however you find them, to let board members in small groups say to each other, let's say in groups of three, what their story is. You want them to try and talk about vision and impact, real high level. What ends up being easier for board members to do is to say, well, last year we distributed 3,000 books in 500 communities, or last year we served 5,000 meals to the elderly and we gave 3,000 free blood pressure screening tests or whatever it is. You want it, what's the impact? What's your vision? What are you trying to accomplish by giving those meals to the seniors? What are you trying to accomplish by giving out those books in those communities? And what is the impact you're having? And we need to help board members be articulate about that, because it's easier to rattle off
stats,
the basic stats and such. That's what everyone defaults to in the moment.
So guilty.
Everyone's guilty of it. I talk often about being an admissions tour guide as an undergraduate. I was one of those people.
You were great at it. No, I'm sure you would be great at it.
No,
oh,
well,
you're an introvert, though.
Well, no, but when I get on the stage, like when I present in front at conferences or whatever I'm on, I do it, like, right? Here's the problem. So I learned to be great at walking backwards for an hour without tripping. But when I started to do this work, I started to think about that and think, well, I don't know that I did such a great job, because I would say we have 4 residential quads, we have 2,800 undergraduates, we have 31 majors, we have a 10-to-1 student faculty ratio. I can still remember that. All of that was available on a brochure back then. Now it's available on the website. Why is the 10-to-1 faculty ratio so important? Why is it important to have 4 residential quads? So as you know, we both just sent kids off to college. So we both did all those college tours last year. And I thought, oh, it'll be interesting to see what the college tours are like. They're still terrible. We went on college tours. You know, here's our dining hall. Here's our law building. Here's our whatever. I can tell. It says dining hall. I could have walked around the campus myself, right? Tell me why it's important to have this residence quad, right? So here's the example with the quads. Now I know what I should have said is we have 4 residential quads, which are all set up very differently to accommodate a student's social and academic needs. Because if they're in an environment that supports it and they're living in a way they feel comfortable, whether it's by themselves or in a suite, cooking for themselves, on a meal plan, whatever it is, being close to the academic building, being far away and such, then they're going to have the best experience socially and academically, and they're going to leave our school best suited to go out into the world, make a difference, invent things, be leaders in their communities, raise their families.
Nice.
Because otherwise we'd be like Soviet era construction, where you have 50 apartment buildings lined up. If you've ever been to, you know, in many parts of Eastern Europe, where there was all this construction after the war, and every building is identical and every unit is identical, even though people live differently. Mm-hmm. Right? So we could be Soviet era, you know, Russia, and build like that, or we could build to suit our population. Look at the difference between public housing, old public housing, which was like that, and new public housing, which realizes how bad the old was. Mm-hmm. We want our case for support to reflect who we are personally and to talk about the impact we're making and the vision. That is hard to do. Back to that. So we have to have training opportunities, and otherwise our board can't do the work they're supposed to do.
Well, and conveniently enough, don't you have a training thing coming up, right? So 9/23. So askingmatters.com. You're on Facebook. Are you on Instagram? Probably or no? Not as much. Okay.
No, yeah, I'm supposed to be, but
yeah,
I'm not
I know,
really.
It's baby steps. That's it. So
baby steps. We figured out the Facebook stuff for today. Go us.
So, but don't ask, don't get. Is your training coming up next week? The 23rd.
Yes, it starts
right?
Monday. It's free. Okay. And it's great for everyone. So it's 4 live webinars and a bunch of Q&As. You get to see my face, which is not my favorite thing, but that's funny. But it's hard to actually do that. But I do that. And you'll learn a lot of the basics about asking. It's completely free. There's no obligation. There's no anything. At the end of it, I do open my membership, because I only open membership twice a year, because I don't want to every – I just don't want to be selling membership all the time.
Well, people want to be committed. You want them to be committed if they're going to do it, right?
Well, that too. Yeah. And I want to have a group of people who start in whatever.
Good.
So it leads up to that, but it's completely free. Last year, 2,000 people signed up for it. Yeah, really cool. And I know we're way north of 1,000 already going into Monday. And you just have to go to don'taskdon'tget.org, or you can go to the askingmatters.com site, or you can go to our Asking Matters page on Facebook, or you know, anything like that, and you'll get the info. And it's great for staff and board members, because you know, whereas staff will stick with me all year and get a membership, most board members aren't going to give that much time to an organization. And this is just 4 short webinars. They're all being recorded. Mm-hmm. So if you can't attend live, you can watch them at your convenience. And they come with a worksheet.
Nice.
Yeah. So
I still like the tactile stuff, because I mean, don't they say that when you write it, for a lot of people, if you write it down, not type it, text it, whatever, if you write it down, it helps with your memory and helps create.
It does. It does. Having said that, the worksheet is editable on screen.
Well, but
good if you print it out.
I print every. I still kill a lot of trees.
I do too. You know, it's an age thing.
I know.
I mean, I think you're a little younger than I am, but we're still from the paper era. Yeah.
Because we know what a Rolodex is, right? Yeah,
exactly. We might still have one in the closet because we're afraid. What if we ever give that up? Will we lose all those names?
I know, right? Exactly. I still need all that. So, well, any other soapbox words of wisdom? Well, I have Gerald Panis was an icon in the fundraising world, right? You sat down with him, you have interviews with him, and he's so fun. So I was listening today, and he said the three B's of board meetings are buildings, budgets, and baloney. So
that's great. I forgot that bit.
Yeah, no, that's true. But, he's just old school, but again, common sense and smart.
Yeah. He would say you got to make it worthwhile. Someone I know went to a board meeting the other night and said, I walked into the meeting and it was silent at that moment. And I actually wondered, were they praying? But they weren't praying. The meeting was so deadly, no one was saying anything. And you need to, you have your board members together for 2 hours, hour and a half, 2 hours. If you have 15 board members, 2 hours plus travel, let's say 3 hours, and time to read them, you're talking about 50, 60, 100 hours of board effort. Are you making that meeting worthwhile? What can you do in that meeting that really respects the time and effort and gets your board members to the next level? Well, some of this training we're talking about would do that, a chance to talk about your anxieties, get them out in the open, and figure out as a team how do you get past them. Talk about how you'd like to be asked. Talk about your story. Make your case for support. All those things are going to help board members. And, of course, give them mission moments. Bring the program staff in. Have program participants come talk about how their lives are being affected. Anything like that. Don't do the reporting.
Okay. Yeah, no, I think, you touched on the elevator speech, which I always think people, you need to have an elevator speech or some form of it. Not a canned one, yes, correct. But you can give them a framework that they can develop.
Yes, you can.
And you need to practice it because I go to a lot of these networking events and I ask people what they do and they can't articulate it. Correct. And they've owned the business for 20 years. Or they've got all these acronyms and that, I don't know what you do. You have to lay it out for me, in plain English.
Exactly.
And so that is just, that's a huge problem. Right. I think for everywhere. Yeah.
Here's an easy one. At the beginning of a board meeting, have everyone write down in 75 words or less what they would say if they ran to someone. They just had 30 seconds. Oh, I'm on the board of Asking Matters. Well, what does Asking Matters do? And you have to say, something that's going to be exciting. They might ask, what do you do? You want to tell them the impact you have, right? And then I have everyone read them aloud. Now, everyone likes each other's more. Every one of them really could use a little work, but everyone gets the idea they're all going to be different, and let's work on them.
Yeah, and then they can pull someone, I forgot about that, and I like that. I'm going to add that to mine, and I forgot about
Yes.
I mean, I've had people on the show where I said, well, what if, I remember hearing the story, and they're like, oh, yeah, it's a great story. It's all about stories.
Here's the coolest thing I heard yesterday. Someone who, when she works with board members and sits down individually with them, and you've got to spend individual time with board members, she starts by saying, let's write your story together.
Yeah.
And it's so cool because then the board member has to step back and think, why is this organization important to me? What am I passionate about? And put it into a framework. Talk about a time well spent, right?
Yeah. Well, it all goes back to Simon Sinek and Find Your Why. I love him.
Find Your Why, yes.
He's great, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So no matter you do. Yeah, no. So it's so amazing. All right. We got like one or two more minutes, I know.
It goes so fast.
I know. You have to come back again. We'll just have to book it.
Oh, my God. It's been an hour.
I know, right? I need a longer
Yakety
show.
Yak.
So, sign up for Don't Ask, Don't Get. Yes. Sign up for the Facebook group. Go to the website, Asking Matters, Brian Saber, all kinds of words of wisdom. Yes. What's the number one thing you can do for your board should do right now? What training? Sign up for training.
Yeah, I was saying, and as a board member, insist on training.
Yeah, that's good.
Insist on training. Say, you've got to train me if you want me to fundraise.
That's perfect.
How about that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
All right. Well, we will definitely have you back, and I appreciate your time. Your time is very valuable, and I'm looking forward to seeing your lovely face on the training on the webinar. Thank you.
Take care, Nicole. Thank you.
What do you want to do when you grow up? When we were young, it's a question we were often asked. As we get older, our passions become clearer, our pursuits become careers, and if we're diligent, we begin to plan for the life we want to live. That's why, at Ameriprise Financial, we ask what's most important to you. Starting with our confident retirement approach, your Ameriprise Financial advisor will ask questions that help you arrive at a customized plan that allows you to realize your goals today, tomorrow, and throughout retirement. With the right financial advisor, life can be brilliant. Call Michelle Heide and Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services Incorporated, today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 16 Lee Street, Units 1B and 1C in Clinton, New Jersey. The confident retirement approach is not a guarantee of future financial results. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services Incorporated, a registered investment advisor.
USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
President Trump says he's naming longtime U.S. diplomat under several presidents, Robert O'Brien, to succeed John Bolton as national security advisor. Most recently serving as special presidential envoy for hostage affairs, O'Brien was often critical of President Obama's foreign policies, saying in a 2016 interview,
"By prematurely withdrawing from Iraq, we had the rise of ISIS, which he downplayed as the JV team. By setting an artificial red line in Syria that was crossed, we ended up with the worst human rights and possibly a genocide in Syria that we haven't seen since Rwanda. And in Ukraine, for the first time since 1938, we've seen a European power, Russia, invade a neighbor."
President Trump says this morning he's ordering more sanctions on Iran, though he hasn't elaborated. It follows weekend attacks on Saudi Arabia's oil facilities, which many are blaming Iran for. And this is USA Radio News.
Hi, this is Wayne Allen Root. Are you among the millions of Americans who feel uncertain when it comes to their health care? I'm happy to inform you there's a solution, and that solution is Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare is a community of like-minded people who work together to pay for their medical costs. There are no networks, so you decide your doctor and hospital. Liberty HealthShare allows you to easily decide how, when, and where you will access health care. Because our rights come from God, not government. It could be the best practical, moral, and economical choice for you and your family. It was for me. I joined. I'm a member. My children are members. Starting at $107 a month for a single, up to $449 a month for a family. That's mom, dad, and all the kids for $449 per month. That's my cost, and I'm loving it. This is the way healthcare should be. For more information, call 855-58-LIBERTY. That's 855-58-LIBERTY. Or visit lightyourliberty.com. That's lightyourliberty.com. And regain control over your healthcare costs. Together, we're changing healthcare for good.
A prominent Democratic political activist and donor under arrest after a man overdosed on methamphetamine inside Ed Buck's West Hollywood home. And it's not the first time it's happened, as over the past 2 years, two other men suffered meth overdoses at Buck's address, and they too passed away. Buck is due in a courtroom in California later today. Another child is dead after being found in a hot car. A babysitter now facing charges. Police in Hobbs, New Mexico say the babysitter called 911 to say she accidentally left the two-year-old she was babysitting in a car for several hours. It's the 42nd case of a child dying inside a hot vehicle in the United States this year. Southwest Louisiana and Southeast Texas gearing up for Tropical Depression Imelda to visit and maybe dump 6 to 12 inches on much of that area. Some spots in Texas could get 18 inches of rain. Remember, you can find us online anytime at usaradio.com.
With a recession ending, if you've been putting off building your business, now is the time to act. General Steel will meet or beat any price on a pre-engineered steel building of the same size and specifications. Act now before steel prices go up. So call us today for free information.
Call 800-965-1290. 800-965-1290. 800-965-1290.
Today is day two of President Trump's two-day fundraising visit to California. He'll be visiting San Diego today to tour a section of the border wall there. With a look back at his activities yesterday, here's USA Radio's Wendy King.
He says he's going to do something about the number of homeless Californians. He criticized the Democrats for the problem.
California is a disgrace.
He blames what he calls the liberal leadership of the state, led by Democratic Governor Gavin Newsom, who, while the president is in the state, wants him to commit publicly to help what he is condemning.
You've got to critique, offer some advice and counsel on solutions. And if you have advice and counsel on solutions, also provide resources.
HUD Secretary Ben Carson is also in California. He's hoping to bring solutions, advice, and resources to help solve the homeless problem.
Former men's basketball coach Rick Pitino is agreeing to settle a breach of contract lawsuit with the University of Louisville that has dragged on for nearly 2 years. He'll receive no money to settle his $40 million suit, but the university will change his personnel file to show he resigned. Pitino had argued the university owed him the salary remaining on his contract through June of 2026 because it did not have just cause in firing him. And the Washington Monument will reopen to tourists tomorrow after 3 years of renovations. And for USA Radio News, I'm Chris Barnes.